from Manchester. Please welcome Arnold Brown.
I went to see my doctor the other day. Well, to be honest, I've seen him before. I know what he looks like. In fact, I've got a picture of him by my bed. So there I was, in the doctor's waiting room, taking in how well everyone looked. As you do. I was flicking through a country life that another patient had sneezed over. I immediately diagnosed severe bronchitis. I then decided to pass the time finishing a novel, but one of the other patients complained about the noise of the typewriter. With all the artists in this country desperate, when I actually got in to see the doctor, he wasn't doing anything medical. He was listening to a Chris de Burgh record. Well, someone's got to do it. When he stopped listening to the record, he started listening to my heart, and then he recommended I made an album. He said I had a very commercial beat. And he said, Arnold, we're on first name terms. I call him Doctor. He said, Arnold, I've got some terrible news for you. There's just been another earthquake in Venezuela. I was very puzzled. I said, what's that got to do with me? He replied, how could you be so callous? So to get into the spirit of the thing, I started crying. That seemed to calm him down. Then I said, Doctor, please give me a checkup. After he examined me, he said, Arnold, I've got some terrible news for you personally. You've only got 40 years to live. I said, Doctor, can I have a second opinion? Well, he replied, it could be 60 years. If you become a private patient. Tonight, I want to talk to you about one of the great problems of our time. I refer, of course, to baldness. Every so often, you get someone claiming they've discovered a cure for baldness, but it usually turns out to be some bizarre treatment. I'm talking baboon's testicle extract. Stranger enough, and this is a bit of name dropping, I recently bumped into God in a shopping mall in a small provincial Scottish town. I recognize him right away by the long beard and his I Ran the World t-shirt. I was flabbergasted. I said to him, what are you doing here, God? And he looked at me and quietly said, Arnold, have you seen the bargains? Strangely enough, our attitude to hair has changed over recent years. In the old days, if you saw someone coming towards you in the street wearing a beard, he'd usually be carrying a couple of dirty carrier bags packed with old newspapers, and as he passed by, he'd probably spit at you. I'm talking Richard Stilgoe. Of course, if you happen to have a long beard, people automatically assume that you're highly intelligent. That is a complete myth. Take Moses. There he was, with his long beard, wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. Too pig-headed to ask for directions.
Hello. Have you heard the good news? Here, take this Bible and read Leviticus chapter 4. It has so much to say about the terrible way we lead our lives today. Let's read some together now, shall we?
Well, I'm actually in rather a hurry, Mr. Bolton. Could you just pay the milk bill?
Camping stove, check. Sleeping bag, yes. War and peace.
Camping?
No, going to the passport office.
Who'd be a copper, eh, Jones? I've been banged up 4 hours in the interrogation room on that rape case.
Difficult one, was it, Gov?
Real tough nut. Sat there trotting out the facts as though they got some special right or something. So I had to start shouting a bit, saying responsible people can't do this sort of thing in a decent society, so I wasn't taking no nonsense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, get a result then, Gov.
Yeah, she dropped the charges and went home.
Right. You've been unemployed several weeks now. I just want to ask you a few questions concerning your availability for work. What type of job are you looking for?
Oh, labouring, office work, factory...
You mustn't restrict yourself too much, you know. Have you had a bash at brain surgery?
No, I was thinking of taking it up at night school.
There was a neurosurgeon vacancy only this morning. If you carry on like this, people will think you don't want to work.
I'll try harder, honest.
Your last job?
Astley Salt Mine. 100 hours a week for 15 years. But they ran out of salt, so I got made redundant.
Did they not offer you alternative employment?
Well, yes, but it was in Bolivia. And I thought it might be a bit difficult to commute on pushbike.
You cannot expect important industrialists to erect factories in your backyard.
Perhaps I was a bit hasty.
So, what have you been doing to find work?
Well, I've applied for 58 jobs and I've been to all job centres within 200 miles of Douse. I memorised Kelly's directory and had me curriculum vitae written by Saatchi and Saatchi. I visited all local factories and shops every day looking for work and parade about in High Street with sandwich board advertising myself. I order 75 newspapers a day and I've arranged for a computerised mail shop targeted at every employer in Europe.
You're not even trying, are you?
Well, I could do more.
I'm afraid the days when you could dangle on the nipple of the welfare state are over. So I suggest you take our latest job scheme to remove you from the unemployment figures. We'll give you 50 pence a week to starve you and your family to death and stop you being such a nuisance to us.
Take it.
Oh, congratulations, you're off the register. And you've got your self-respect back. Who says there's no hope for the unemployed?
A friend of mine who had been out of work for a while had some good news recently. He's been headhunted by another job centre.
I, that am curtailed of this fair proportion, cheated of feature by dissembling nature, deformed, unfinished, sent before my time into this breathing world scarce half made up, and that so lamely and unfashionable that dogs bark at me as I halt by them.
But apart from that, you've been happy living next to Sellafield, have you? And now that part of the programme where we take a dip into Arnold Brown's postbag.
Dear Arnold, what do you think of government retraining schemes?
A great idea in principle, but when you think about it, what could Nicholas Ridley possibly be retrained for?
Dear Arnold, what are your thoughts on the greenhouse effect?
My head aches, my sinuses are blocked, and I'm feeling generally nauseous. In fact, from now on, I'm going to stop sleeping in the greenhouse.
Dear Arnold, what would you be if you weren't a comedian?
Advertising is a remarkable profession. I once bought a pack of razors on the basis of an advert. The first blade, it said, shaves you close. The second, even closer. The third and fourth, remove the skin and flesh. The fifth skims the wallpaper on the other side of the room. The sixth blade trims the neighbor's hedge. And the seventh scythes across the rolling wheat fields of Nebraska. Unfortunately, my scissors were blunt, so I couldn't open the packet.
Dear Arnold, are the letters that you read out sent in by genuine members of the public? Yours sincerely, Marmaduke Hussey.
Dear Marmaduke Hussey, I'm afraid it's beneath my dignity to reply to a character from the Beano. There goes the second series.
Sir, thinking of getting away for a while?
I'm heading for Europe, France, Switzerland, and then the German border country.
And when would you like to go?
As soon as possible.
Last minute booking, eh? Well, let's see. I can get you onto the ferry from Folkestone to Boulogne tonight. How many in your party, sir?
15,000 adults and 400 tanks.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Well, we used to have transport of our own, but since the NATO cuts...
Business or pleasure?
War with Russian land forces. Bit of both, really. Is there any chance of an earlier ferry? We're in a bit of a hurry.
Cabins or couchettes?
Oh, whatever's going. How much?
£6 million and fourpence.
Any discount for saving the free world as we know it?
Perhaps Northern Ireland is more your price bracket.
Look, The Ministry of Defence have given me this bottle full of 10 pences. What can we get for that?
We could register you a nuclear device to Leningrad. Oh, just one other thing, sir. These 15,000 adults, do they want to sit together? Judy! Fancy seeing you here.
How are the job vibrations?
Oh, really savvy at the moment. I'm currently playing a rather exciting character in a long-running soap. Oh, you mean Eileen Bilton of Warrington Runcorn. Are you working? Not at the moment, no, but I was one of the models for Who Framed Roger Rabbit. With Bob Hoskins. Yes, you know, he acted 3/4 of that movie alongside inanimate objects.
I did something very similar last March.
Spielberg?
No, Oldham Rep.
Anyway, don't you notice anything?
Your crow's feet are more pronounced than usual.
The ring, silly.
Oh, how quaint. $6.99.
Platinum. And the diamond is worth at least 50,000.
I always think that diamonds are rather vulgar.
Don't you want to know who 'tis rumoured gave it to me?
Okay, who gave it to you?
It was a certain royal personage who is very useful. He makes the tea.
Oh, him!
It was at Aspects of Love, our eyes met over the steaming mugs of Earl Grey. We want to be together all of the time, but his duties prevent it.
So when do you get measured up for the tiara?
After I've had the virginity test, done the hand-waving class, and had my bio written by Barbara Cartland. About 4 o'clock.
And when do I get my wedding invitation?
You don't. We split up next week.
Due to family pressure.
And I'm so heartbroken.
Before you sell your story to the Daily Star.
Absolutely. How do you know?
Did it last year with the news of the world?
You know, people often come up to me and say, Your Grace, do you feel it's fair that you live in a 200-room mansion in 1,000 acres of Deer Park with ensuite heated swimming pools, each swimming pool stocked with beautiful adolescent girls from the third world wearing body-hugging thongs? Wouldn't you rather that a tiny proportion of your wealth helped to pay for a hip replacement operation for some 90-year-old widow who's worked all her life as a lathe greaser? And I say to them, no.
I didn't think they'd deliver the sperm in a milk bottle.
Oh, I'm glad they did. Much easier to open than cartons. Mind you, it's a lot more than 30 pence a pint.
But how can you be sure whose it is?
Oh, it's guaranteed to come from a genuine Nobel Prize winner. Look, here on the label, next to the sell-by date.
And what are you going to do with the bottle? Afterwards, give it to me.
Well, keep it, of course. The child will need a father figure.
Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Sutra.
Sutra.
Scissors.
Scissors.
Large green wobbly thing with knobs on.
Large green wobbly thing with knobs on.
Purple banana coming out of the sky. It's going to eat me. It's going to eat me.
Wake up, Dr. Rolf. Wake up. You've been having a nightmare.
Oh, thank God. Oh, well, back to work. Scalpel.
Private Ward 10, the ordinary story of the everyday folk who work in a place where being healthy means not being wealthy. And in the National Health Ward, Dr. Arnold has an announcement to make.
Right. Pay attention, National Health patients. We've got the Health Minister coming round this afternoon. He's on a very tight schedule. I don't want any of you spoiling his visit. I've written down what you've got to say to him. Mr. Bacon, your line is, I'm bearing up fine. God bless you, sir. Mr. Hyde, if you could say, still, it could have been the left one as well. Oh, and Mr. Powell, you'll have to vacate the oxygen tent at 12. We need the space for the television cameras.
Oh, Dr. Rolf, I must tell you, I've been moonlighting.
What else?
A surrogate mother.
And I never noticed.
You're always so busy.
And how was it?
I can't describe the feeling of joy when the midwife told me I'd given birth to a 10,000-pound baby boy.
What do we want?
More praise.
Where do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
More praise.
Where do we want it?
Now.
What are you Nazis doing?
Demonstrating for the health minister for more pay. We're having a day of action.
Well, as a surgeon, I'm all in favour of you taking industrial action. In fact, as you're all losing a day's pay, I'm going to show my solidarity by sacrificing the same amount. All together.
What do we want?
Well, that's that. No one can say that I didn't do my bit. See you tomorrow.
Meanwhile, in casualty...
You won't get anything from me. Just my name, rank, and serial number. You can torture me if you like, or flog me to within 2.54 centimeters of my life. I'm saying nothing. Nothing. Allons au fond.
You better alert the press. That's the worst case of Legionnaire's disease I've ever seen.
And back on the wards, the minister is talking to a national health patient.
You see, I really want to know how you feel your treatment is being affected by the health cuts. So how are they looking after you? Your tonsils aren't too good, are they? Oh, no complaints there either. Yes, that's why we picked you. Now, Mrs. Bingham, how's the coma? Keeping your chin up?
Meanwhile, in the operating theatre...
Dr. Rolfe. I still don't understand what you're trying to do.
It's an experiment. I'm genetically crossing a pay package with a life support machine.
To what purpose?
To create a living wage.
Here we are, Minister, our new style operating theatre.
Oh, very impressive. Why does it look like a supermarket checkout?
It's all about efficiency.
Operation £300. Antibiotics. Hold on.
Sister,
That'll be £2,500, please, Mr. Davis. Kidney donor card. That'll do nicely, sir.
Will the minister close down Private Ward 10? Can Dr. Rolfe's genetic experiments ever succeed? And has Dr. Arnold really joined the struggle of the sons and daughters of toil? Perhaps not. But find out in the next series of Private Ward 10. So, you're looking for something detached, 3 bedrooms and handy for the West End. What sort of price did you have in mind?
£7,500.
£8,000 if we sold the car less.
Yes.
£8,000.
Yes, it does sound a lot, doesn't it? Said like that all at once.
£8,000. I haven't heard a phrase like that for 25 years. Not in connection with houses, anyway. Lunch, perhaps, but not a house.
So, what have you got?
That one will do nicely. Mm.
That, madam, is a property in Belgravia we have on sale at 3.5 million.
It wouldn't come down a bit.
I can, however, offer you this.
Looks like a manhole cover to me.
Actually, the cover itself is not included in the price.
Oh, that's better. An old station to convert.
Not quite. Note the bench in the foreground. £8,000 will buy you the lease on that for 2 years. Or this, available in Walthamstow, at a shade over your price. Much sought after, a 1972, 2 in the front, 2 in the back residence with many interesting features.
It is, unless I'm very much mistaken, an abandoned Cortina.
No.
Well, we'd have to sleep your parents on the roof rack, Mary.
Well, I'm afraid the market around 8,000 is rather limited. Unless, yes, the property does come to mind. This.
Oh, that's more like it. In a proper big garden, too. Is it in our range?
In a manner of speaking, this is in fact my house.
And you're selling?
Not quite. My wife and I are looking for new domestic staff. Turn up Monday with 2 references and we'll give you a full consideration.
Fritz.
Speak, my old buddy.
It's so restful sitting here on the veranda in our gas masks.
Yes, it's a beautiful evening to watch a riot being quelled.
But I can't help thinking, as we sit here... enjoying the comforts of democracy. What if the nightmare came true?
You mean the one about being stranded on a desert island with Archbishop Tutu?
No. The nightmare.
Oh, my God. You mean if they took over?
Yes. If it looked like being the end of white supremacy.
Well, there'd be only one thing for it.
You don't mean...
Yes.
You'd use the ultimate machine?
Yes. The sunbed. If you can't beat them, join them.
I never said that.
And neither did I, my main man, soul brother.
Before I pass sentence, have you anything to say? Well, in that case, I sentence you to 20 years in the prison of your choice. You will therefore be taken from here to the place from whence you came and shown some share prospectuses. You will be offered competitive tenders for your period of incarceration. Of course, if you have private jail insurance, you will be able to go to an open prison with squash courts and classes in city fraud. And, being only a homicidal maniac, will be allowed 5 weeks' holiday in Marbella each year. Otherwise, you may choose between slopping out, sharing a broom cupboard with 5 fellow inmates, or, if you really want to slum it, a Scottish prison. Well, they didn't vote for us. So, I leave you in the hands of the 10 prison and remand businesses of England and Wales.
And may God have mercy on your soul.
Okay, boy. It's time to meet old Spikey. 24,000 volts and we wave you goodbye.
Electricity. Energy for life.
Tonight we look at the career of a man with a unique reputation in the glittering world of show business.
Arnold Brown.
Arnold's first break came in the 1940s back in his hometown, Glasgow. In this rare BBC interview, Arnold describes what happened.
I was born.
Pretty soon, all the predictable consequences occurred. Breastfeeding, wind, teething, and...
A phone call from David Lean.
Arnold, I'm making Great Expectations tomorrow, and you simply must play Pip.
Love to, David, but I have to go and see my grandfather. He's in hospital having his ears pierced. An amazing man, 85, and still got his own ears.
Yet this wasn't the last of Lean's attempts to corner Arnold's talents. The great director remembers...
I was casting Dr. Zhivago. I knew Arnold was perfect for the romantic lead. Sadly for me, for film, for history, Arnold disagreed.
Look, David, my hair is too dark. I'll clash with Omar in the close-ups. Besides, I never quite hit it off with Alec Guinness.
David Lean finally despaired of trying to cast Arnold after he turned down Ryan's Daughter.
Come on, David. Give Bob Mitchum a break. He does the accent so much better.
Yet other directors were not so easily dissuaded, and Arnold shocked the film world further in the 70s when he sold his part in Saturday Night Fever to John Travolta for the price of a coffee and a croissant. Instead, Arnold opted to take a much smaller part in the movie.
Hey, Mom, these meatballs are gonna run all over my new shirt, huh?
Eat your meatballs, Tony, and stop calling me Mom.
Why did Arnold Brown turn down the lead for this relatively insignificant part?
I've never played a practicing Catholic before. Besides, acting requires a kind of inner peace. I felt I was personally too similar to John Travolta's role to play the character properly.
It was now that Arnold, sickened by the backstabbing of the Hollywood movie scene, gave up his film career...
Such as it was.
...and turned instead to the backstabbing of the British alternative comedy scene. Here's some vintage Arnold recorded at London's Inn Joke Club.
Why did the capitalist elephant cross the road? Because the working class chicken had been made redundant by that woman Thatcher. Oh, I see the CDI are in tonight.
Arnold's career as a comic blossomed until one fateful night, Arnold was in Manchester, recording a comedy show for BBC Radio 4. He was confronted in his dressing room by an alternative punk poet called John Bitch.
You sold out, Mr. Brown. You stopped telling jokes about unemployment under Thatcher.
Only when I'm playing major capitalist vengeance. After old Tabby would like it.
What about the people's struggle?
The people's struggle? I spit on it. That's the kind of person I am. The struggle these days is to get reliable servants.
It's no good, Mr. Brown. I've got to do this.
Arnold Brown will be missed by us all. To us, the cast of this show, he was not only a true friend and a talented fellow professional, he was above all a meal ticket.
Thanks a lot for dying, Arnold. We had high hopes of a second series.
You lied to us, Brown. You said you'd never be seen dead on the radio.
Look, I've just been in the dressing room. Oh. And there were all of Arnold's little things laid out on the table, just as he left them. Yeah? Script, pen, bottle of baboon's testicle extract.
Never worked for him, did it?
No.
Can I have his pocket calculator?
Oh, God, you're sick. Anyway, I've tried it. It's broken.
You've been going through his belongings, you unspeakable ghoul. Oh,
call me sentimental, but I just wanted something to remember him by. A simple wallet, a few credit cards.
I quite fancy his Chick Murray joke book.
You disgust me. I'm going to end this show right now, but just the way that dear Arnold would have wanted it. You have been listening to Judy Hawkins and Company with Judy Hawkins, Chris Campbell, David Charles, Emma Clark, and Judy Hawkins. It was written by Peter Carey and Marvin Close, and the company of Judy Hawkins, Peter Newsome, Ian Rennie, Gerald Hell, Judy Hawkins, John Kelly, John Lindsay, Nick Maynard, Simon Michelson and Judy Hawkins, Bill Naylor, David Nelson, Barry Nichols and Jules Duggleby, Martin O'Callaghan, Joan Ormerod, Anthony Peregrine, Nigel Powell and Judy Hawkins, Mark Roberts, Simon Rook, Julie Rutherford, Angus Walton, Sean Wilson and Judy Hawkins. And the show was produced by Paul Z. Jackson with Judy Hawkins.
Why is it so dark? Radio's so badly lit these days. Emma, Chris, David, Judy. Strange. Everyone appears to have gone. I thought it was all a joke. I'm not really dead, am I?
Number 24, Arnold Brown. This is God. Come in. Your time is up.
And before I go, I'd just like to say one thing. If there's anything in this series you haven't understood, please regard it as significant.